Happy birthday, KPFT!
This is 90.1 KPFT FM and FM HD1 Houston, with translators at 89.5 FM K208DG Galveston and 91.9 FM K220KC Huntsville. Houston's community station, 90.1 KPFT, a Pacifica radio station.
Here we are, you and I, ready for So What's Your Story on Houston's community station, KPFT. That's right, you found us again, or maybe for the first time. I'm Larry Thompson, tonight's host, and here we celebrate the power of story by placing a spotlight on storytellers. Did you know we can all be storytellers? Maybe you haven't heard that before. Our guest tonight will share some of her favorites and tell you about her recent work bringing stories out of regular folk. I'm so happy that you've tuned your radio or your computer or your tablet or your phone to 90.1. So What's Your Story on Houston's community station, KPFT. Now let's get to the reason you've tuned in tonight, great stories. And I'm pleased to welcome a former librarian and drama teacher who has presented her multicultural tales throughout the U.S. and internationally. She has captivated audiences at many festivals, including the National Storytelling Festival Exchange Place, the National Black Storytelling Festival, and the Texas Storytelling Festival. And her name is Toni Simmons. Toni is an engaging storyteller and author who often brings new life to her stories with songs, rhythm, chants, and audience participation. She's the co-founder and weekly coach of the Zula B. Wiley Library Youth Tellers, who were honored as finalists for the National Arts and Humanities Youth Program Award. Her involvement in the storytelling community includes serving as artistic director for the Texas Storytelling Festival, a lifetime member of the National Association of Black Storytellers, past chair of the Texas Library Association's Storytelling Roundtable, and a grant panelist for the Texas Commission on the Arts. Now, that is a bio packed with big, long words, and I'm glad I got through it. Folks, sit back, tighten your grip on the steering wheel if you're driving, as I welcome in Toni Simmons. Toni, how the heck are you? I think your summer has been jam-packed already.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Larry, for having me. And yes, it has been a busy summer, but I'm thankful for that because, you know, last summer we were still kind of looking for places that we could tell our stories. And now people are having more in-person programs now. So yes, we're glad to hopefully get back on the road again.
Now, you're just coming off a fantastic in-person set of sessions, aren't you?
Yes. Just finished doing a series of Juneteenth celebrations.
There you go. And where were those?
One was in College Station for the George H.W. Bush Library. They do this annually with one of the city's recreation center, Lincoln Center, with kids from the Boys and Girls Club and the local recreation center and community. They bring in a storyteller. They have a march, peace march. It's just a wonderful experience. I also did something for the libraries in Houston and in Denton for Juneteenth.
Well, I'm glad you said it was a peace march because, you know, we wouldn't want you out there doing any sort of riotous marching. That's not.
That's right.
Have you ever been on the airwaves here at KPFT for So What's Your Story?
I have not. So I'm just so excited to be here.
Well, yes.
This is my first time.
I'm thrilled to have you out here. We really tried to bring the best storytellers that we can, put them on the microphone. And you know what? If you weren't here, it would just be me talking to myself. And they've heard that enough. And now you gave me a list of stories that you were going to tell tonight.
Yes.
And it looks to me like you're bringing out your favorite Southern tales. Is that accurate?
Well, a few of my favorite, because we only have an hour.
There you go, folks. See, now this, when you're dealing with a professional, she's got 75 hours of material she has pulled out. The three or four best things she can just for our listeners here on Houston's Community Station, KPFT 90.1. I want you to start right off with a story that's one of my favorites as well. And folks, when you listen to this, you've got to think about that country preacher who travels around preaching at revivals. Tony, let's hear Old Dry Fry.
Yes. Now, I know everybody knows Old Dry Fry. Right? No? Well, as Larry said, he's a country preacher, the kind that would travel from town to town preaching at revivals. Now, can you guess why they called him Dry Fry? Well, they called him dry because his sermons were so dry, even he fall asleep. And you know why they called him Fry? That's it. He loved fried chicken. In fact, you didn't have to pay him to preach. You just give him as much fried chicken as he could eat. Well, Dry Fry was famous. You know, everybody wanted to have him come to their town. But he was traveling through Texas. And he was going to preach over in East Texas, down by Tyler, you know, on a Sunday morning. They were having a big revival outside by the lake. Yes, now they had planned to have a big, big picnic after the services. So they all had brought big baskets of food. And you know what was in those baskets? Fried chicken. Well, Dry Fry got ready to preach. Oh, and everybody was there. It was a big crowd. And oh, he started sniffing some of that fried chicken in one of those baskets. Ooh, and he got to feeling the spirit. Ooh, and he started to preach so fast that his false teeth fell out. Down there in a mud hole. Well, everybody felt sorry for Dry Fry, but nobody wanted to put their hands in that hole and get his teeth out. But little Susie May was there. She was a smart little girl. She ran over to one of those picnic tables, opened one of those baskets, pulled out one of those drumsticks, and then she untied a ribbon from her hair, her little ponytail, and she tied it around that chicken leg. She went over to that hole and she just dangled that drumstick like that, and those false teeth came up and grabbed hold of that drumstick. That's just how much Dry Fry loved fried chicken. Well, after services were over, Dry Fry had eaten everything that the people had brought, and he went home with Brother Johnson and his family for dinner. And you know what they served? Fried chicken. Well, Brother Johnson's chicken must have been extra finger looking good, because Dry Fry was munching on that chicken so fast he wasn't even chewing, just swallowing it almost whole, and he choked on a chicken bone. Before Brother Johnson could get up and help him, he fell out the chair on the floor, dead as a doornail. Brother Johnson ran over to see what he could do, and all he could say was, "Oh, me. Oh, my. Dry Fry just died." Oh, he looked at his family and he said, "Nobody's going to believe me. They're going to think I killed him. I'm going to be hung for murder. As much chicken as he eats, they'll never believe he choked." Oh, he looked at his family. He looked at Dry Fry. And he said, "We're going to have to ditch this dude." So he picked Dry Fry up, made sure his false teeth were in really well, because when he fell out of the chair, his teeth fell out on the floor. They waited till it got really dark, and they took Dry Fry down the road a bit and propped him up along the bushes there and left him. Well, really late that night, two teenagers were out for a stroll. You know them, Frankie and Johnny. You heard Frankie and Johnny, they were sweethearts. Well, that's a whole nother story. Well, they stopped because they saw something up ahead in the road. They thought it was a robber waiting to mug them. So they were going to act first. They picked up some big rocks and they started throwing those rocks at Dry Fry. One of them hit him upside the head. He fell over into the road. His false teeth fell out again. They ran up there yelling, "We got the thief! We got the thief!" But when they saw who it was, all they could say was, "Oh me, oh my, it's old Dry Fry. Oh, what are we gonna do? Nobody's gonna believe us. They're gonna think we killed him. We're gonna be hung for murder." Well, they looked at each other. They looked at Dry Fry and they said, "We're gonna have to ditch this dude." So they picked Dry Fry up, made sure his false teeth were in really well, and they took him around the back of Farmer Brown's house and propped him up in front of the barn door and left him. Now, Farmer Brown had been bothered by thieves. They come into his barn and try to get his chickens and pigs and everything. So he didn't sleep well. He'd get up in the middle of the night and he'd look out and check on things. Well, that's what he did this night. And when he looked, he saw somebody over there by the barn door. So he yelled, "You better get away or I'll shoot." He had a real big shotgun. But Dry Fry couldn't move. So he fired. Psh, psh. One of those bullets hit that barn door. It shook Dry Fry loose. He fell over into the ground. His false teeth fell out again. Oh, Farmer Brown ran, "I got the thief, I got the thief." But when he got there and he saw who it was, all he could say was, "Oh me, oh my, it's old Dry Fry. Oh, what I'm gonna do? Nobody's gonna believe me. They gonna think I killed him. I'm gonna be hung for murder." When he looked at his farm, he looked at Dry Fry and he said, "I'ma have to ditch this dude." So he picked Dry Fry up, made sure his teeth were in. He got a big croaker sack. You remember those kind of old burlap bags? And he stuffed Dry Fry down in there. And he slung that sack over his shoulder and started headed into town. Well, you know, it was still the wee hours of the morning. The sun hadn't come up yet. So he's walking into town. And as he's walking into town, there were two robbers on their way out of town with croaker sacks on their shoulders. They had just robbed the butcher shop. They saw Farmer Brown. He didn't see them. They thought it was the sheriff. So they dropped their sacks and hid in the woods. When Farmer Brown got to that spot, he didn't see anybody. He saw these sacks there in the middle of the road. He took his sack with Dry Fry and set it down. He opened one of those robber sacks. Oh, and he saw all that meat, ham, and ooh, and pork, and all kind of chops and stuff. He just hit the jackpot. He left Dry Fry there, took one of those sacks of meat on home. A little while later, those robbers looked out from the woods and they didn't see anybody. They figured it must not have been the sheriff. So they came and picked up their sacks and headed on home. They took their sacks of meat into the smokehouse and left them. Went inside the house and got themselves all washed up, woke their wives up and told them to get some breakfast cooking. Well, one of them went in the kitchen to get things ready, and the other went to the smokehouse to get some bacon or some ham or something to go for breakfast. And when she opened one of those sacks and she didn't see any bacon or ham, she saw, you know who, she screamed, ah! And everybody came running out to see what was wrong. When those robbers saw who it was, all they could say was, and you help them, oh me, oh my, it's old dry fry. Oh, what are we gonna do? Nobody's gonna believe us. We're in so much trouble with the law, they'll think we killed him. We're gonna be hung for murder. Well, they looked at each other. They looked at Dry Fry and they said, we're gonna have to ditch this dude. So they pulled Dry Fry up out of that cooker sack, made sure his teeth were in good. One of the robbers went and got an old horse, put an old raggedy saddle on it, and they propped Dry Fry up into that saddle, gave him a nice hat too, and tied his hands to the reins. They led that horse on outside. They gave it a good whack, and then they shot up in the air, and they started screaming, horse thief, horse thief. And that horse took off running, and everybody could hear the shots, and they could hear that horse, and they come running out of their houses with their guns, and they were shooting, trying to catch that old horse thief, and they were shooting at Dry Fry. And when he got close to him, they got a good look, and they'd say, oh me, oh my, looks like old Dry Fry. Well, you know what, Larry? That horse is still riding to this day. Some people told me they saw it here in Houston, down by the rodeo. Well, you know if that horse comes by you, because you'll recognize the rider. Because like I said, everybody knows old Dry Fry.
Outstanding. That is one of my favorites. I tell you what. Old Dry Fry. And that's got to be a crowd favorite whenever you pull it out. Everybody gets a smile on their face and starts chiming in. Oh, no, Dry Fry.
Yes, I hope people do chime in. Just remember, oh, me, oh, my, it's Old Dry Fry. Dry
Fry. That, and we got to ditch that dude.
Yeah.
Now, your next tale is going to take us across the Sabine River into Louisiana. Tell us this story. I don't think I know this story. It's called The Talking Eggs.
Yes. This story will remind you of an old familiar fairy tale, folk tale that you may have heard growing up. It'll come to you once you hear it. And it is a Creole tale, and it's about making choices. Now, you know, sometimes stories were passed on when people would travel from place to place. That's why you have a lot of stories that sound alike. So it will remind you of a story that is very familiar. And it takes place down in the southern part of the state of Louisiana, near the swamps and the bayous. There was a mother who had two daughters. One daughter's name was Rose. Oh, and she was mean and evil. But she had another daughter, and her name was Blanche. And she was so sweet and kind. But can you guess which daughter the mother liked best? Yeah, that's it. She liked Rose. And you know why? Because she was mean and evil herself. and lazy. Oh, they both were lazy. They sit on the porch, you know, those big porches they have in Louisiana, in the big old rocking chairs, and they rock back and forth and fan themselves in the heat and just daydream all day about moving to the big city like New Orleans and going to parties and balls and Mardi Gras. And they make poor Blanche do all the work. She'd have to tend the garden, fetch the water, cook the food. One day, the mother sent Blanche to the well to get some water. And when she got there, there was an old woman at the well. She was all covered up with the shawl, hot from the heat. And she went over to Blanche and she said, "Child, could you give me a cool drink of water, please?" Well, Blanche was so kind. She offered the old lady a drink and she thanked her. "Thank you, child. God's gonna bless you someday." And she left. Well, Blanche picked up that bucket of water and she headed on home. But when she got there, that old mean mother and sister started yelling and screaming at her. "Girl, what took you so long to bring this water? We waiting out here in this hot sun, dying of thirst. You can't do anything right." And they really started to scold her. Blanche started crying. She ran away back into the woods. The old woman saw her and she said, "Why are you crying, child?" Well, Blanche told her all about her mean sister and mother. And she said she didn't want to go back home. And the old woman said, "You may come home with me for the night, but you must promise not to laugh at whatever you see." Well, Blanche promised she wouldn't laugh. She went with that old woman through the woods as they walked through the trees would open up wide. And you could see the path really clearly. And then they closed up tight again. And the path was gone. Soon they came to a cabin, but it was really a raggedy old shack. And out in front of that cabin, there was a cow. But this was no ordinary cow. This cow had two heads and he had corkscrew horns. And he didn't say, "What does a cow say?" No, no mooing. He said, "Hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw." Blanche promised she wouldn't laugh, so she turned her head to keep from smiling. And that's when she saw the chickens coming from around the back of the cabin. There were purple chickens, green chickens, yellow chickens, blue chickens, all colors of chickens, some with one leg, some with two, three, four, five legs. And the chickens weren't clucking either. They were going and just dancing around. She had to bite her tongue to keep from laughing at those chickens. They went inside the cabin. The old woman asked her to build a fire. Well, Blanche was so sweet and kind. She built a fire in the fireplace for the old woman. And then when she turned back towards the old woman, that's when she saw her take off her head. And she put her head down in her lap, and she started to comb her hair. Well, Blanche was about scared out of her wits, but the old woman had been kind to her, so she didn't scream or run away. She just watched as she combed her hair really nicely, and then she started to braid her hair. And when she was done, she lifted her head back up on her shoulders and smiled. She then gave Blanche a bone, you know, the kind you save for your dog, hardly any meat on it. But Blanche didn't complain. She put that bone in a big pot with some water and put it there on the fire. And she said, I'll make stew for you if you have some vegetables for the soup. Well, the old woman just nodded her head. And when Blanche looked back at the pot, it was already full of soup. Oh, the vegetables were there bubbling over. She gave her one grain of rice to grind. And as she did, it just multiplied more and more. Ooh, soon they had a pot full. They ate well that night and went on to bed. In the morning, she went to the barn to milk the cow. Well, and she closed her eyes so she wouldn't laugh at the cow. And she got sweet milk, cream for the coffee. But the old woman called her over and said, "Child, you must go back home now. But I promise things will be better for you. And since you've been so kind to me, I want to give you a present. Go to my hen house and you'll see lots of eggs. Some will be plain and ordinary, and they will say, 'Take me, take me.' And some will be fancy with gold and silver and diamonds, and they will say, 'Don't take me. Make sure you only take the plain eggs that say, "Take me." And on your way home, throw them one at a time over your left shoulder, and you'll get a surprise." Well, Blanche did as the old woman said. She went to the hen house, and all the eggs started talking. They were going, "Take me, take me, don't take me, take me, take me, don't take me, take me, take me, don't take me." Blanche didn't know what to do. She wanted one of those beautiful silver eggs or gold ones, but she remembered what the old woman had said. So she grabbed the plain eggs that were saying, "Take me, take me," and she headed on out of that hen house. She waved goodbye to that old woman and she started on home, throwing those eggs over her left shoulder. And sure enough, as she walked home, she got a surprise. Out of those eggs came beautiful silk dresses and satin shoes and a whole big carriage and a brown and white pony. She got jewels and all kinds of fancy things. And when she got home, her mother and sister saw her with this and they said, "Oh, Blanche, darling, where have you been? We were so worried about you." "And where'd you get all these fancy things from?" Well, they were very nice. They got Blanche to tell them all about the old woman and the eggs and her cabin. And as soon as she went to sleep, they made their plans. "Listen, Rose, you're going to go find that old woman just like your sister did. And you're going to get some treasures too. And then when you get back, we'll take the things that she brought and we'll steal those and head off to New Orleans and live like grand ladies." Well, Rose was lazy, so she didn't like that plan. "Oh, Mama, I don't want to go look for no woman in the woods and get any eggs. Can't we just take the stuff that Blanche has now? I don't want to go look for the..." Well, the mom said, "Girl, do as I say. It's not enough here for both of us." Well, the next morning, Rose went to find the old woman. She didn't have to look long. She found her right away, and she said, "My sister said you have a pretty house. Can I come and see it?" Well, the old woman said, "You may come, but you must promise not to laugh at whatever you see." Well, of course, Rose promised she wouldn't laugh. She went with that old woman through the woods. As soon as they walked through, those trees opened up wide. And you could see the path. And then they closed up tight again. And soon they came to that cabin, that raggedy old shack. But when Rose saw that cow with the two heads and the corkscrew horns, and she heard him go, "Hee-haw, hee-haw," she fell on the ground laughing. "Look at that funny looking cow." And then the chickens. Remember the red, green, blue, purple, orange chickens with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 legs? Well, she saw them come dancing around the cabin going, and she just fell on the ground. She was rolling, laughing so hard. "Look at the funny chickens." And the old woman just nodded her head. They went into the cabin. she asked Rose to build a fire. Well, you know, Rose was lazy. She said, I ain't gonna build no fire. Build it yourself. Well, soon it got so cold, she had no choice but to build a fire. And then she was hungry. She said, don't you have some food here? Well, the old woman gave her that bone. Rose looked at it. Who you think gonna eat off this? It's not even fit for a dog. Well, she put it in a pot of water and it stayed just a bone. She wouldn't even grind the rice. And so she went to bed hungry. The next morning, she went to milk the cow. But she kept laughing at the cow, making faces. Da, 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 da. That cow gave her sour milk. It's a wonder the cow didn't give her a good kick. But when she got back in the cabin, that's when she saw the old woman take off her hair. And she put her head down in her lap. And just as she started to comb her hair, you know what that mean girl did? Yes, she took that old lady's head. She grabbed it and said, I'm not going to give her your head back until you give me some treasures like my sister brought home. But the old lady's head spoke.
Child, you're mean, but I must have my body together, so I'll tell you. Go to my hen house. You'll see lots of eggs. Some will be plain and ordinary and regular, and they will say, take me, take me. And some will be fancy and shiny, gold and silver with diamonds and pearls, and they will say, don't take me, don't take me. Make sure you only take the plain eggs that say, take me, take me. And on your way home, throw those eggs one at a time over your right shoulder, and you'll get a surprise.
Well, Rose didn't trust the old woman, so she didn't give her head back. She put that old lady's head outside on the porch, and the old lady's body was groping around trying to find her head. Oh, that old mean girl took off for that hen house. She opened the door and all the eggs started talking. Take me, take me, don't take me, don't take me, take me, take me, don't take me, take, don't take me, take me, take me, don't take me, don't take me. Well, she looked at those plain eggs and she said, you think I'm crazy? I'm not going to take one of these plain old regular eggs. She was trying to trick me. I want one of these beautiful gold ones. Look at that. Ooh, and look at that pretty one with diamonds and the silver one. She grabbed all the fancy eggs she could, and she started on her way back home, throwing those eggs over her right shoulder as fast as she could. And you know what? She did get a surprise. Out of those eggs came whip snakes and toads and frogs and a big old gray wolf and a whole nest of hornets. And they started chasing that mean old girl through those woods. And she was hightailing it, screaming bloody murder. Now, when she got near her cabin, her mother could hear her. And she saw all these scary things. She got the room and tried to chase them away. But instead, they were chasing the mother too. And they chased them both way on the other side of the wood. And they didn't stop for a long time. And finally, Rose and that mean old mother came back. And they were covered with mud. They were stung. They were bitten. But they were even more upset when they discovered that Blanche was gone. You know where? Right? To New Orleans. Oh, to go to parties and balls. And of course, Mardi Gras. She became a grand lady, but always remained sweet and kind. And Rose and that mean old mother, they stayed mean. They looked for that old woman and her cabin and the eggs every day. but they never, ever could find them again.
Fantastic. Now, you don't get a story like that just anywhere, folks. That's why you tune in to So What's Your Story right here on KPFT 90.1 FM, Houston's community station. There's also 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville. And don't forget about the HD2 free internet to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We're proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Guests are ordinary folks with extraordinary stories to tell, just like that one. Now, in case you're just joining us, my guest tonight is Toni Simmons. Among other things, she is a recipient of the Tejas Storytelling Association John Henry Falk Award, and she's a performer who continues to mentor, support, and promote storytellers, including children. I think the next tale you have for us, this is a tale that's unfamiliar to me, and you call it the Baby Lady. So tell us a tiny bit about it, and then let's hear Baby Lady.
Well, yes, and I also want to make sure that the story I just told, that you recognized it. Yes, remember I said it would sound like a story that you may have heard before. It was a Creole version of Cinderella.
Cinderella.
Yes. Now, the Baby Lady story is about a woman who's a treasure in her own community. A lot of times we hear stories about people who are famous and they've done this and that, and you probably think, oh, I don't know anybody like that. But I want you to think about, after you hear this story, there may be somebody close to you, somebody you grew up knowing that did something unusual or outstanding or different in your own community. That's what this story is about. Miss Allen, come quick. The baby's coming. That was the call Miss Ellen Sturck heard many times. People all over Coconut Grove would come calling for her whenever someone was in labor because she was the baby lady. She was the baby lady. She was the baby lady. She was the midwife. Yes, Miss Ellen Sturck was a midwife in Coconut Grove, Florida for over 35 years. She delivered hundreds of babies, or as they would say, brought into this world. Now that was the way it was, especially in the days of segregation in the Black communities of Miami-Dade County, Florida. Black patients were segregated in city hospitals and were kept in unclean, dilapidated, and mostly undesirable areas of the hospitals. Because of this racism and because of the unavailability of doctors during those times, women preferred their own midwives, someone they could trust, someone they could depend on, someone like Miss Ellen, because she was the baby lady. She was the baby lady. She was the baby lady. She was the midwife. Now, during this time, Bahamians had immigrated to Miami, and many settled in the Coconut Grove area, brought with them their old midwives, their own healing styles, their own remedies. Miss Ellen came to Miami in 1910 from the Bahamas, and she had been trained by her mother, Charlotte, who was also a midwife. Now, Miss Ellen was a pretty woman. with fair skin and long black wavy hair that she wore pinned up in a big bun with those large hairpins. Now, don't mistake her prettiness for softness. Mm-mm. She was known to get anybody straight if things weren't right. Miss Ellen rode a bicycle with a big wooden basket in the front. And when going on deliveries, she'd carry food in the basket, her little black bag, and a big pot of hot water. She carried the food because many times the families didn't have anything to eat. And she carried the pot of hot water because often there was no indoor plumbing and you'd have to wait for someone to get the water and for it to be heated. Miss Ellen would visit her patients for 9 days or more after delivery, making sure things were right with the babies and the mothers. Oh, she loved her work and the patients loved her because she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the midwife. Now, sometime later on, Miss Ellen sent for her mother, Charlotte Ingram, from the Bahamas. And they both worked in Coconut Grove and South Miami area as midwives. Miss Charlotte would walk to her deliveries and she wore a long white starch apron. She carried a little black bag too. Sometimes she and Miss Ellen would go together with their little black bag. Sometimes they had to stay late into the night waiting for delivery. In the summer of 1931, Miss Ellen delivered her first set of twins. It was June 22nd, and the mother, Miss Maggie, had gone to work that day as a housekeeper, or in those days, they said she did day's work. Late that night, she went into labor, and someone came running for Miss Ellen. She jumped on her bicycle and rode the 2 or 3 blocks to Charles Avenue. She got there in time and delivered the first baby. It was a girl, weighing about 5 or 6 pounds. She waited and waited and waited for the placenta to come. An hour and 45 minutes later, she realized it wasn't a placenta, it was another baby. This time, it was a boy, but he only weighed about 2 or 3 pounds. Everyone in the room was silent, almost holding their breath. They thought he was stillborn. Someone even sent for the mortician. But finally, the baby cried. Miss Ellen put the babies in a dresser drawer. She and Miss Charlotte taught their patients to use boxes and dresser drawers as cribs. Oh, Miss Ellen also delivered a set of triplets. Nothing was too much for her because she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady, she was the baby lady. Baby lady, she was the midwife. Now, you've often heard about fathers being nervous during labor, about them panicking or even fainting. Well, Miss Ellen had a patient whose husband got so excited when she went into labor, he just lost his mind. He ran out of the house screaming and locked the door behind him and ran down the road. Well, someone came and got Miss Ellen. She got to the house. She could hear the mother in there screaming, but she couldn't get in. She had to get someone to break the door down. She got in time and delivered the baby. Now, even though Miss Ellen's patients loved her, some white doctors didn't like the fact of having the black midwives around. One said, when a woman is at her most needy time, she's often at the mercy of some coarse old dame or ignorant black granny. Another called them a necessary evil that had to be controlled and regulated. Well, regulation meant required education, licensing, elimination. The state sent white nurses to teach and train the midwives. They set up midwife clubs. Miss Ellen was the president of one. All the practice of midwives had been transformed from a cultural one to a newly regulated one. But that wasn't all. After licensing, there were still many other rules to follow. Filing a birth certificate was one. The certificates had to be perfect with no errors. And the recording was done by hand. Miss Ellen's daughter, Vernica, did the recording for the certificates for her patients. But when trying to file them, they were always trying to find some mistakes, some errors. Now, I told you that Miss Ellen was no pushover. I could hear her now with that thick Bahamian accent, just insisting and saying, "Man, it ain't so." All of this didn't stop Miss Ellen, though, because she was a baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. Now, Miss Ellen continued her practice until 1966. And even though she didn't pass on her gift to her daughter, she was allowed to be in the delivery room of the hospital when her daughter had her baby. And that baby was me. Talking about the baby lady, baby lady, the baby lady, baby lady. She was the baby lady, baby lady. She was the midwife. My grandmother, Ellen Sturr.
Fantastic. Now, folks, there you go. That's a powerful story. That's Tony Simmons channeling Paul Harvey there with that reveal at the end. That is super good. Now, we never heard Paul Harvey sing during his stories, though, so as a bonus, you only get here on So What's Your Story every Thursday night on KPFT. Now, we can't bring you this program all by ourselves. We've got to mention our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild, and that's a fantastic place to learn about the art of telling. And they're meeting virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month, and you can find them online, HoustonStorytellers.org. And they'll have the link there, and they'll tell you about their times to start the meetings. And by the way, you can also check on that website, HoustonStorytellers.org, for past programs of So What's Your Story? Now, another way to crank up your storytelling skills, you can think about becoming a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network. And Tony would remind us all that storytelling is all across the great state of Texas and beyond. Anytime you're outside the confines of the Grand Parkway, you're going to be able to find storytelling. And both of us love storytelling, but Tony, not everyone can easily find their voice. I know you want to share with us an experience that you had recently in Wichita Falls. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you're right. Everybody thinks, I couldn't do that because I don't have a story to tell. Well, I thought that too. For years, I told folktales and stories that I had learned. I thought I didn't have any personal tales to tell until I decided I would write the story about my grandmother. Now, what I found out was it wasn't so much about my grandmother, it was about the people who she had delivered.
Yes.
Everybody knows about their birth stories. People have told you, oh, this is what happened when you, on the day you were born, and this is what happened. And so I've even done workshops where people talk about their birth stories, talk about their name stories, how they got their names. So there's a story everywhere. You don't have to look far and wide. You don't have to be a professional storyteller. Last summer, I had the opportunity to do a couple of storytelling workshops with the citizens in Wichita Falls. They were challenged to come and tell a story about the city, about their experience in Wichita Falls, whether it was something growing up there, how they got there, what some remembrances of Wichita Falls. They were going to record these stories for StoryCorps, which is a national organization that goes around the country collecting everyday stories.
Okay. So they're going to take these stories from that have a connection to Wichita Falls,
yes,
build a history,
yes,
of Wichita Falls through stories,
yes,
of people who live there.
Yes. And these people had never told stories before, never even written a story, but they had some kind of anecdote, something that they remembered that happened to them. I'll give you some examples. One young lady talked about meeting her husband, who was from Wichita Falls, and how she got to know him and what brought her to the city. And so basically became a love story and why she fell in love with Wichita Falls because of him. Another lady talked about her name. She was born in Wichita Falls and what her name meant and what the significance of it was. And these were stories that her parents had told her, why they had named her after this person who had lived there.
Now, did you, so everyone has these things in their head, and
yeah,
was it your job to help craft them into a story, what we would quote unquote call a story?
Yes, yes, because
and they were excited for this. The people
were
excited to do it.
Yes. Well, first they came to watch me tell, and then I did some basic storytelling tips and techniques so that when they told it, even for the recording, that they would have the gestures and the expression, but then they had to write and craft it. So I shared stories that were not just folk tales, but stories like the Miss Ellen story, or the baby lady story that had to be actually written, and how you would take different anecdotes in this little segment here and this little incident here and put them all together. One lady told a story about a neighbor that she just admired as a child. This woman didn't have a family, but she loved to go to her house. She loved to pick the flowers that she grew in her garden, and she had all these memories of that. And she would spend the day with this neighbor, and it was the special relationship she had with her. Well, we had to make that into a story, and give something that happened on a certain day, a beginning, middle, and end, and then add something to it to make it interesting.
Now, did you find at the close of this, or maybe during this, that mm-hmm. that you had that connection back to your grandmother? You were midwifing these stories into existence.
Well, I guess so. You could say that.
I mean, I could see you on your bicycle with your black bag and your basket of food and the hot water and bringing these stories to life as they come out. That's fascinating. Now, do the people come out of an experience like that and they're more comfortable recognizing stories in their own lives?
Yes, because again, as I said, some people think, oh, there's nothing exciting that ever happens to me. And stories don't always have to be action or thriller stories.
Yes, yes. We don't need a princess all the time. We don't need, you know, a pot of gold over here buried beside a tree. That's and when you, I guess, for you though, hearing their presentations, I'm assuming you got to hear those final products.
Yes.
And it has to really, it has to really touch you to be able to see the growth and the impact, I guess.
Yes.
We could say that you had on their community, certainly, and on each of their lives as well.
Right.
Goodness.
And it made me think, well, this could happen anywhere.
True. True. Well, I know it happens around my house quite a bit, but that's just me. I was out back earlier changing a flat tire on the truck, and I don't want to tell you the trouble I went through to get to that tire onto the. Anyways, that would just take me on a different path.
Right.
Now, have you done additional story? How does this StoryCorps come to be? How did they know to contact you to assist and facilitate this?
Well, the Arts Council of Wichita Falls contacted me to do the workshop and the performance, basically through the Texas Commission on the Arts, which I'm on their touring roster, and they wanted
Fantastic.
To have a story. But then it sparked this whole interest in coming to the Texas Storytelling Festival. You know, you just don't know where you're planting seeds. And
that's
what I love so much about the youth group that I work with. You know, you're planting seeds, you know, so that storytelling will continue to grow and be there long when we're not here.
Well, speaking of youth programs, I know we talked about this a little bit. I want to get you back on later in the year with some of the youth performers. It's really spectacular. The folks that are listening have, you know, that don't have any idea how this program reaches out to youngsters, and we're going to have you back out here. I thank you so much for being with us. I know you're incredibly busy. You just came, I think you just landed from Bible study tonight to jump on with us here, and I certainly appreciate that. We're going to get ready to head out the door here. We're going to be wrapping up our program, and I'm just going to tell folks that, you know, you hearing stories like this gives us a reminder that we can all tell stories of our own.
Yes.
And you know, don't forget, we've got some great programming coming up next. We've got Solid Gold Hits coming up right behind us here on KPFT. Whether you're home or you're driving home or you're just chilling in the park, be sure to catch us every Thursday for So What's Your Story. You keep on loving great stories, and we'll keep bringing them to you. Good evening, everyone.
It's summer here in Texas, and for a lot of children, it's the best time of the year. But plenty of children in Texas and across the U.S. depend on the meals they get at school. For them, summer can be a time of hunger. That's why KPFT is teaming up with their friends at No Kids Hungry to make sure every child gets the healthy food they need when school's out. If you need to find free meals for your children this summer, just text the word FOOD to 304-304 to find a local program serving free meals in your community. That's FOOD to 304-304. Let's make sure every child has a great summer.
Hi, this is Mike Honig.
And Andrew Ferguson.
Hosts of Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, a political talk show on KPFT HD2.
We discuss news and opinions that might be under your radar.
From around Houston, the state,
the nation, and the world.
Plus unique analysis that only a liberal and a socialist can provide.
But our biases don't blind us to facts.
We're not here to be left-wing or right-wing.
We're Think Wing. Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig. Wednesdays at 11 a.m. on 90.1 HD2 and KPFT.org.
KPFT, Houston's community station.
Hi, thanks for listening to KPFT. KPFT has always provided us with music and public affairs we don't hear anywhere else. It's not mainstream, and that's how we like it. Please support community radio and join KPFT. Call 713-526-5738 now and pledge your support. My name is Jane, and I'm a